are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Reggie Hammond, and I'm really excited to bring you another episode of the Finding Your Forte podcast show. We have a really exciting guest today that let's just say it has been some time now. We've been trying to get this conversation set up. We've worked through all of the challenging and competitive calendars we both have, and we are here today. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited to introduce you to Corey Ruth. Corey and I have been partners working on projects in which he's had an opportunity to deliver for clients that we share for a number of years. And he is a president and CEO of Mergence Capital. So and I'm sure he'll tell us all about it during our conversation. But Corey, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So much that I want to get into with this conversation, and I'm really excited that we were able to carve out this time. Just as a reminder for our listening audience, we like to use these episodes as a way to introduce you to really talented, purposeful professionals that are doing great things in the way that they're delivering the work through the lens of their purpose, tapping into their passions, leveraging their strengths, igniting their motivations in ways that show up through the lens of purpose, which is really what we're focused on as an organization in terms of empowering purpose for leaders, for teams, and for organizations. So Corey and I have had the honor and the pleasure and the trajectory of partnering on with a number of other clients that we've been able to work together over the years. But I don't want to steal his thunder. Yeah. Corey, if you don't mind, can you kind of give us a little bit of a flyover of your career to date and some of the work that you've had the honor to deliver, even encapsulated, and I know there's a lot that you could talk about, so I'm sure right now you're going through figuring out what to share, but even to put into context the really important work that you do as from an advisory relationship in terms of the technology landscape for the state. Wherever you want to start, I'm going to let you drive.
Yeah. So I guess I'll start by saying this is my third startup.
Okay.
We tend to think of startups as like a proprietary technology, but it's my third startup. The first startup was Most Deft, which started during the dot-com bubble, and it was a dot-com. And when the bubble burst, we sort of rebranded as like technology advisors and a technology project management house. Essentially how we did it.
Okay.
And we kind of lucked out and landed a contract with American Express when they acquired Harbor Payments, which was a mid-sized payment processing firm based here.
When was that? Like, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, when was that acquisition? Like 2007.
Okay. Okay.
So we got picked up essentially by Harbor Payments, but at that time, because of the acquisition. They were American Express, so we got this great brand as sort of a launch client.
Okay.
And that's really what got us into management consulting. And we also was blessed because one of the founders of Harvard Payments really kind of mentored us through management consulting. And that kind of was what got our feet wet. And that brand kind of opened the door for us to get into a lot of the Atlanta-based Fortune 500 to 1,000 firms.
Okay.
Like Fiserv and NCR and et cetera. And so,
what was the project that you guys were that work centered on?
That was the technology integration portion of the merger.
Okay.
So there was a couple of verticals that came out of that mm-hmm. that turned out to be what our brand is all about now.
Right.
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 So the first one was American Express wanted to uplift the security posture of Harbor Payments through the merger.
I bet they did.
Yeah. So we did security certification with Verizon. We did their PCI, their first PCI.
Okay. Look, don't get too all technical on my audience, Corey. And,
so we got involved in that piece. And then the other one was they had to migrate their data center.
Okay.
They had four data centers. They had to consolidate them into one and migrate them. So we did that.
Okay.
And then the final sort of vertical there was just all of the integration for any merger that you have to do, personnel and apps and all of that kind of stuff.
You know, it's, coincidentally, we've never had this conversation, but coincidentally, I did a post-merger integration myself.
Okay.
And I know that the, you know, kind of the technology piece is really the, you know, nuts and bolts of it, but it's the processes and the people and the cultures, and then thinking through what's the new organization look like, who's in charge, which organization did they come from, when they're which really could be the more challenging part of like some of the post merger integration
work.
That's
it. We got a lot of, you know, post merger integration work after that.
Okay.
Which is why we renamed as Mergence Global.
Understood. Oh, and, okay. I see what you did there. Awesome. So that was kind of your start. And then did that kind of catapult into Mergence?
That we were like, so who are we now? Mm-hmm. So we're not
Mergence. That's an interesting question to answer. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Especially in the middle of delivering work.
Well, it's a scary question to
I can imagine.
When I'm sitting in front of you. Because it's like a whole conversation.
Don't do that. Don't do that. But we'll get to the bottom of it.
So, but and then Most Depth we felt was not a good corporate, you know, it was great for a tech startup, but it was like, all right, if we're going to be doing this kind of work, we might need to change from Most Depth. And so we actually put this.
Now, wait, I'm sorry. The hip hop head in me just wants to just, you mentioned it. That was a brand before, but of course I want to know, like, what came first? Was it the rapper or the Most Depth brand?
Wow.
And was there any connectivity? And are you a fan? Like, I got questions.
Yeah. Well, people kept saying I look like Most Depth.
I see it.
So I was like,
plot twist. I didn't see that one coming. I absolutely see it.
So I was
like, you put a T on the end?
I put a T on the end for deft.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but it's no T at the end of Most.
Okay.
So it was just, I spelled it, his name, and put a T at the end. So
got it.
That was it. Yeah.
Got it. Were you a fan all the way back to Black Star?
This
is a whole other podcast.
I wouldn't call myself a fan of him. I like his work.
But I
would never, like, I don't think I ever looked for a song that he did to listen to, right? Like,
got it. Well, I have to send you a playlist. Then,
okay, yeah, send me a playlist.
And you know what I will also say is that he might be a better actor than he is a rapper.
I'm a fan of his acting.
Oh, okay,
And, but I remember I was like, we were trying to figure out something, and I had these guys actually doing the work that were in Philippines and India.
Uh-huh.
And they were the really the cool ones because they were like, every time I came up with a name, they was like, nah, that's not cool enough. They're cool enough.
Wow.
And it was like, one of them kept saying, he was adamant, it has to like really sit in the hip hop space. And so I was like, well, you know, people say I look like Most Def. Uh-huh. And so he was like,
that's it.
Let's go. And then he was like, well, but I don't think we can use his name.
Right, you can't. Right.
So I was like, well, just let's actually put He's abbreviating DEFT.
Right.
So let's actually put the T on the end of it, and that's what we did.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Okay, all right. We're over that pivot, but I like it myself, so I'm excited about it. So the birth of Mergent's Capital.
So it was Mergent's Global.
Okay.
Commands books on the phone. Now we have Mergent's Capital.
Okay, I understand.
Which kind of came out of.
Get the brand straight for me. My apologies.
So we started doing a lot of work in Israel.
Okay.
I used to work for the governor.
Okay.
And we took a trip to Israel.
But you ain't just going to fly over that without telling people what we're talking about here. So talk about that.
So I worked in the governor's office for a year. And when I actually took time away from Mergent's Global, worked in the governor's office for a year, and I went back. And when I went back, we got a contract with NCR to do their acquisition of a Israeli firm called Retalix.
Okay.
So I'm back and forth to Israel for the sort of duration of that engagement. And right as it ended, I got a call from the governor's office saying, hey, the governor is planning a business mission trip to Israel and would like you to help to recruit the technology executives from Georgia to take this trip over there with him. So I helped recruit 32 technology executives, mostly CIOs, CISOs, et cetera, work with you to bring Navigator Management Partners over
there. Yeah, I remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And so we while we were over there, we really kind of went through their entire tech ecosystem.
Okay.
And, I mean, it was actually probably more demanding of a trip than people expected it to be.
Right.
The takeaway was to try to somehow map what we're doing in Georgia to what they're doing in Israel.
Okay.
Israel is seen as the other Silicon Valley. And so how do we...
Little known fun fact.
Little known...
What's behind that?
They actually, on a per capita basis, have more unicorns than Silicon Valley does.
Interesting.
They're a startup country, right? Their country got started up in the 40s.
Right.
So they had to build a government, build an infrastructure, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely,
so now they have this like startup culture there.
Right.
That's really fascinating.
Right.
And so we were trying to figure out, okay, what are they doing? So they really marry government and the startup community in real interesting ways. Like, I'll just say this, their venture capital community, when they identify a startup that they want to invest in, the government will pay $9 for every $10 that they invest.
Oh, wow.
So it spreads the venture capital money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also, the government is making decisions based on what the venture capitalist sees, not based on what the government sees.
Now, that opens up a whole another world of, like, so does that mean that the government has equity in all these startups, or is it that, like, I mean, I think about what we do here in the U.S. that's similar might be when cities like build stadiums with football teams, when football franchises build stadiums, and, you know, cities make co-investment, deals there. Is it similar to that in terms of the ownership and equity?
No, it's they have a chief scientist.
Okay.
They just actually changed that name, and I don't remember what they changed it to. But
okay,
this office is responsible for the startup ecosystem.
Okay.
So all the hubs, the technology hubs, all the making sure that they're connected, making sure the laws are favorable.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of, startup capital, a venture capitalist says, hey, Reggie, we like your technology. We want to invest in it. So then the chief scientists will say, well, how much are you going to invest? We're going to invest $1 million.
Right.
They put up $900,000. The venture capitalists put up $100,000, and you have your money.
Okay.
And because of that, they've been extremely successful. We worked with a startup called Fortscale,
okay,
which is user behavior analytics.
Okay,
they were bought by RSA Security. So that's, I mean, it's just an amazing sort of experience. I did my capstone project at Georgetown,
okay,
on the Startup Nation and how we can create that bridge to Georgia, making Georgia the place that they go to. So Israel is so small, about the size of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
A startup can saturate Israel very quickly. So then they have to either go, wow, to Asia, Europe, or the U.S. The U.S. is seen as like production. So you're like, let's go to dev, let's go to, you know, design first before we go to production. Once you go to the U.S., if you're not ready, it dies and you don't come back.
Understood.
So essentially, they'll go to Europe or they'll go to Asia. Some instances, they go to Africa. They really try to blow it out. And then when they get mature enough, they try to come to the U.S. So the goal is to make Georgia the landing pad for when they come to the U.S.
Okay, that is incredibly exciting. I'm sure we could spend some time talking about, but I really want to kind of take back, you know, get back into the trajectory, you know, kind of closer to some of the work that you're delivering now.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we have partnered on a number of engagements, I just personally know of how critical you have been to clients delivering some incredible projects, you know, kind of transformational initiatives here based out of the Atlanta area, and some that you're even working on now.
Yeah.
Talk about like the thread that connects those projects and the roles that you've been able to play in some of them.
So, we did a project with Fiserv.
Exactly.
Right? And that was a tier one project.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we did this project that we're doing now with Cox,
mm-hmm,
Cox Enterprises. And so the thread is that for whatever reason, I've been really good at supporting the principal or the CIO or the CISO.
Right.
And so I've, throughout my time with Mergence Global, have really just kind of fallen into this sort of chief of staff role,
right,
or senior advisor role where I'm supporting the principal person. I'm looking at their entire portfolio,
right,
trying to find efficiencies, trying to make sure we're getting sort of productivity from areas that they don't generally expect to get productivity.
Right.
And just basically what I found is that technology executives, they don't come up through like the B schools.
Right.
These are guys who were in the 80s and 90s, the dude in the basement doing break fix, the developers, the ones in
highly dependable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then now they're the CIO. And it's like, that's great. Keep the business running. Mm-hmm. But also we got this merger that we have to do.
Yeah.
And we need you to sit and talk to the board about that.
Right.
And so when it comes to the business side of being a CIO or being a CISO, they find comfort in what we provide in helping them do that. So we've helped them build presentations. We helped them prepare for their presentations. We helped them navigate, you know, conversations with leading customers, like in the case when there was a breach at Equifax.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of stuff we really helped them do.
And that's a really critical role. It is one that is easy to, you know, kind of underappreciate, but you really slot in that way really well, which is the dot that connects these engagements. But it will be easy for someone listening to that to think, you know, Corey is this one-man organization delivering work. But you have a really unique kind of go-to-market strategy, which, you know, we have had the opportunity to work in the ecosystem of a number of firms doing similar work. But their model is typically they've got leaders in the firms, you know, kind of driving the practice, growing the business, building the relationships. Mm-hmm. And then they bring in folks like you that are, and they're more hands-off, you know, just checking in on the relationships, making sure. But you lead from the inside. So you lead from in the way that you deliver for clients' projects. And then you bring along resources as you need them in order to, you know, be able to meet the requirements and be able to flex with the demand.
Yeah.
So, Corey, talk about you know, what that role has been like for you and the ways that you engage these clients in that really critical role, and like what critical success factors you need to be able to embrace in terms of being successful in those types of roles.
So having the perch of being sort of a chief of staff or support to these principals, I've been able to see management consulting from their lens. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, what are the things that they are frustrated about? What are the things that management consulting firms are doing really well?
Right.
They don't seem to be able to get away from management consulting firms, even though they have a lot of frustration about them.
Okay.
And one of the things is the leading from within. It's like the person that I need the most is the person with all of that experience and expertise in their head that tends to leave me after the engagement gets started.
Right.
And then you put all these practitioners here. Well, I have a team of people who can do practitioner work.
Right.
Practice. Right. I need you. I need your strategy. I need your advisory. I need you right there.
Right.
And I don't have that. And so I was like, well, I can play that role. Well, I just ended up playing that role.
Right.
Because they bring me in to play that role. The other thing that I found that a lot of management consultants do is they recruit out of college, and that person will find their entire career as a consultant. So they don't have anyone who actually has worked on the other side.
In industry, yeah.
And so I call it corporate grade. They don't have any corporate grade experience.
Yeah, understood.
So a lot of times they give
Easy now, you talk about me, but go ahead.
But they'll give you... Because you need both.
No, you need both.
Yes.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
For sure, you need both. So, but they'll provide a strategy that makes sense. But just the reason why projects are failing is not because of bad strategy. Right. It's failing because they're not delivered in a vacuum.
Right.
So you have competing interests, you have limited resources, you have changing priorities.
Right.
You have, what I call corporate politics, so this director over there does not believe in the direction that we're going in, and so he's blocking it. And so if you don't say, let's put a strategy together to figure out how to navigate the politics, forget the strategy, the technology strategy, let's figure out how to navigate the politics.
And get buy-in.
And actually knock down these roadblocks and not just put... not just mark it yellow on the status card, which a lot of consulting firms do. So I just was trying to figure out how can we be in the gap between what management consultants deliver that makes these executives happy, which is the fact that you've been a consultant the entire time and you have this language that you speak, and you have this, you've been seeing all of these different companies do the same thing. You know what's being done right. You know what's being done wrong. All of that is great. They're missing that sort of bridge between what this executive knows and can do and what his team can deliver and the bandwidth that they have and what you, the value that you bring. And so I've just been trying to be in the middle. The problem is that typically leads with me on site, and I haven't figured out yet how to hologram myself. Well, I have. It just takes
Well, you shouldn't, right? I mean, the businessman of me said, no, you're uniquely you. But you mentioned a couple of things that I just cannot pass up the opportunity to unpack a bit. And I just had an epiphany for as long as I've known you. I've never really kind of figured it out is, you know, what people may, at least on this call, but most of the ones that know you, is that in addition to your business and technology prowess, you have a politics prowess and a trajectory. I've never really thought about how you bring that acumen from, you know, your expertise in the political landscape, particularly here in the state. Like, that's, I'm sure, your playground, if you will.
Yeah.
But how you can bring that to organizations to navigate the politics of successfully delivering projects, where most people would think that either happens or doesn't happen organically, you actually bring it very intentionally around just managing all the stakeholders around successful projects.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. And you talk about projects leading, you know, projects, you know, succeeding or failing. And I just remember seeing some research some years ago that talk about a third of projects are successful, another third of projects are either delayed in some way, and then another third of them are you know, fail. So that's a lot of investments in projects to have so many of them, like, not fail. You know, I would imagine this understanding the political landscape that drives the success of a project is a make or break factor for a number of them.
It is. I just think that when take the case of Equifax post breach, you've had executives being let go at the highest levels. And then in addition to that, you have their four largest customers, Bank of America and Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan, et cetera. You have their largest customers saying, hey, we want to see you meet a certain security posture within a certain time frame, and we need to be updated. You had 20-some-odd states suing them, and they had their own security demands. And then you had the card brands, American Express, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, saying, hey, by the way, you passed PCI compliance a month before the breach. We want you to go through it again. We're only giving you 3 months to do it. And so it's like, okay, you have all of this happening. They brought in PwC, 200 consultants there, and the CIO for the United States was like, I need my own guy. Like, I can't rely on PwC. Their loyalty is to the CEO. I need my own guy. So he asked around. Somebody said, you got to have breakfast with Corey. We had breakfast. Started that. I think the next day I was on an offsite planning session with him and his team. And then we got started. And we went through their recertification effort around the card brands and talked to the state's attorney generals and talked to their leading clients. And we did all of that. To help them, but the biggest challenges was not with the external groups, it was navigating all the politics internally, because everyone was looking over their shoulder, no one had trust, everyone was you know, trying to find another job, everyone was like, if you look into that area, you might see a mistake that my team made, so I want to block you from looking into that area. It was so you know, just toxic post breach. Now it's a great organization. It was great before, you had that undercurrent happening where they were overlooking some things, but it's a really great, because they fixed a lot of the issues that other people are probably still sitting on. But in that moment, it was just so toxic and so crazy. I don't think people were seeing straight. And it's like, if you haven't put together a strategy to navigate the politics of this, you're never going to get success.
Wow. Corey, I'm on the edge of my seat, because I just, for the first time in my long 25-plus illustrious career of either personally responsible for delivering projects or having them have to be delivered in the sphere of influence of the work that, for relationships with a client, I've never... And, like, specifically and intentionally articulated the necessity for managing and navigating the political landscape for delivering projects. I mean, it was stuff that I did, you know, innate. And I, in some cases, really similar to you, often got the call to kind of go get people to talk. You know what I mean? It's, you know, notoriously business and technology folks, you know, get stuck with communication challenges. But I'm so into this conversation that I forget that we're recording a show. But what I want to do is take a pause, but I want to set up what I would like to get into when we resume this conversation, and that is this thing that you're beginning to surface that is going to set up a great announcement that we have with you, and this is the difference in managing projects and leading projects and what that looks like in terms of the trajectory of your own career, and then how we can, or what you can do, or what we're planning to do, so that you can have really important conversations that other technology executives might be able to lean into, where, to your earlier point, they have their careers to this date may have come up in a very technology centric space, and now they've got a lead, right? And which hasn't necessarily been. Anyway, I'm all excited about it, but let's take a break and we'll come back and kind of take that back up. All
Absolutely. Right.
Thank you.
I always had to be so good, no one could ignore me. Carve my path with data and drive. But some people only see who I am on paper. The paper ceiling. The limitations from degree screens to stereotypes that are holding back over 70 million stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time for skills to speak for themselves. Find resources for breaking through barriers at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Okay, we are back. I am so excited to continue this conversation. I just feel like we're just like on the brink of so many things that we really want to talk about. Yeah. But just to bring us back to the pleasure of who we are having this conversation, we're continuing this conversation with Corey Roof. And as our conversation has unfolded, we're discovering he is political, business, technology, thought leader that we never really kind of articulated in that way, which is really fascinating because in both of our experiences, we recognize how important that is, but how, and sometimes, you know, our colleagues really kind of take that for granted. And so, you know, there's so much more that we could talk about there. Frankly, we ought to save it for something that we put into a jar and put it on the shelf to sell. But more importantly, I really want to set up this conversation around what you have observed in what helps make technology executives, particularly those having to deliver, you know, these business critical transformational initiatives, you know, what you've observed about how they navigate the different requirements of managing people and projects and teams versus leading people, projects and teams. And I just want to kind of leave that open there and just let you freestyle for a bit about what your observations have been around that.
Yeah, there's different styles of technology leaders. And in many cases, you have the hands-off person that you don't see a lot on the IT floor because they are up in the boardroom, they are in the senior C-suite, and they are just spending their time around those leaders. And then they're bringing back to the IT floor the IT projects and initiatives that's going to come out of the conversations that they're having every day. And those leaders tend to be very adept at talking to the senior leaders and less technical. And what I found from those guys is, hey, and this actually happened once, a CISO took me to the edge of his office and we looked out on the IT floor and he said, "You see all of these guys?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "I don't trust any one of these guys.
Wow.
And I need you to filter for me what they're telling me."
That's a powerful. I got to go back and grab to tell people what a CISO is. Okay. So CISO is a Chief Information Security Officer. And I'm going to keep Corey honest and trying to use our technology abbreviations that he's used to. So kind of, he knew he was talking to me, but I got to keep you all
in
the conversation as well. But that's that says a lot.
Yeah.
That says a lot. And I think about it in the context of, you know, a lot of my coaching with teams usually – I use this tool called the 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. Mm. And if you are familiar with the approach that they take, that the model takes, you can envision a triangle that has 5 stripes through this triangle. And there are these five dysfunctions that if you don't have the bottom one, then you can't have the ones above it. And it starts out with the lack of trust. Mm. So if you don't have trust on your team, then you can't have healthy conflict. Then you can't have accountability. Then you can't have commitments. Then you can't have results. Mm. And so this whole trust thing is really deal breaker. He basically said, when he said that, he basically said, we won't deliver anything successfully because, unless I can get you to do what I'm asking you to do.
Well, I mean, I think it's the evolution of information technology because that person used to just be break fix in the basement. You never see them unless they're coming up to your desk.
The pizza boy. The pizza under the door. You take the pizza and you pass it back under the
door. That's it. And now they're having to integrate into this whole business, this whole corporation.
Right. And talk to people.
and so it's like, okay, a lot of them feel uncomfortable. And then when you think about the type of person that is a technologist, they are an introvert a lot of time. They are people who they're very technical. They understand their stuff. You talk about, architects, you talk about developers, you talk about systems analysts and all of these people. The first thing I do when I go into an organization is the senior executive would be like, okay, so we got you a desk right here by mine. And I'm like, no, I need to be in the basement sitting next to those guys because if those guys don't trust me, I'm not going to be able to give you good information.
Wow.
And so it's like, I need to be buying them lunch. I need to be buying them breakfast. I need to be their guy. And the first thing you need to do is fight some battles for them. Make them happy. Make them trust you.
Before you get to the point where you're
fighting battles for the executives.
Right.
It's very much, my dad was a union guy,
uh-huh.
and I feel his sentiment in them. He was always talking about demand and what management was trying to do.
Right.
And I just remember hearing that union talk coming out of my dad. And that's how I feel about it, that they feel like they're being dumped on and that no one really cares about what they're doing. And so so that's one of the things that, that's one of the types of managers. The other type is the highly, highly technical one. He's on the floor with the guys. He's in the weeds, but he don't have a clue how to talk to the senior leaders. He don't really have a clue what to do when he leaves their office with an initiative or a task or how to translate that into, the technology space. And for that person, you're helping them build presentations for the boardroom. You're helping them interpret data and analytics from what his team is doing so that he could speak in plain speak to his peers and senior leadership that's in the business. And so they typically have good trust. I'm looking at one in my head that goes to lunch with his team every day. And that guy is just really good from a technical perspective, a Georgia Tech grad, knows his stuff, came up from the bottom, worked his way all the way up to the C-suite.
Right.
But, having to sit in those rooms and be able to cut off a CFO and say, here's the problem with that idea.
Right.
That's a whole nother challenge that he's experiencing. So just being able to find, first of all, what's this person's style and where do they need me to fit in?
That's so fascinating. And it's almost like we're in this part of the conversation. I often find myself talking about the art and the science of delivering projects. And this is more the art, right? This is stuff that you're not going to find on work plans that says, hey, build a healthy political relationship with all your stakeholders. Although it should be, and it makes me think about the difference in what managing and what leading projects looks like. And that, when I think about the difference, I think about managing projects and programs. I think about work plans. I think about status reports. I think about, just making sure that the tactical execution for a program is happening. When I think about leading, I think about what do you need to say to others, what does your relationship need to be with others so they're willing to run through a brick wall for you? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that they are creating outcomes, so that they are empowered, positioned, to be able to bring their best to a project without you having to navigate them through the tactical side of a project. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm really eager to hear not only your perspective, but other perspectives of those that you have relationships with, is like how they navigate between those two.
I mean, for me, I think at a tactical level, it's about, you know, in agile development now, they have personas.
Right.
So I try to create personas for all of the stakeholders and all the people that are around. And I'm like, what key initiatives? My coach used to say, the more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war. So when you get there, before you need them, you go in, like, can I have lunch with you? Can we have coffee? What projects are you working on? And they think, oh, he's a consultant trying to expand, trying to upsell. No, I need to know what initiatives you're running and how those things are going to run the conflict exactly with my client.
That's exactly
and I need to know, like, if I got to come to him to get him to do something for my client, I know exactly what button to press with him because I know what. And if that means that let me help you on that, then I'm going to help him on it. But just being able to put those personas together. Now, I'm imagining that some of us, that's innate. You almost have those personas just innately.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good practice to, like, put it down and say, here's this person's interest. Here's his strong person on his team. Here's a weak person on his team. Here's where his projects interact and cross over with the projects of my client and stuff. And you may never need it. And then there's times you do. So, but navigating between, you know, actually – you know, managing projects and actually leading, I think, is the difference between understanding what challenges these folks. The challenge to leaders today is not technical, but their job is technical.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
So they're thinking, I got this. I've been managing technology all my life.
Right.
But the company's not asking you to manage technology.
Right.
They're asking you to manage people.
That's exactly
and
right.
And budgets.
Get things done.
Help us figure out how we could fully integrate this other company. When NCR acquired Retalix in Israel, Israel has a different week schedule, so they start work on Sunday and end their work day on Thursday, their work week on Thursday. And they also have a totally different holiday schedule. Because they're not a Western country.
Right.
So they don't celebrate Christmas, right? And we do. Their New Year is different than our New Year, right? So two things happened, and that was a $650 million merger. Two things happened that was into really three things. First of all, they bought them for their technology, their software. We did an analysis and found out they were fighting about integrating their TSL, Microsoft, and no one could understand why they were fighting so hard. It was like, dude, just assimilate to NCRs. But it was fighting. And we did analysis of it and found out that they actually use TSL because they basically give their software away, and then they're making their money off professional services. And they use it to build out their entire invoicing. And so everything's centered around their use of that. Well, so now you understand why they're fighting so hard to keep it the way that it is. The second thing is, I was in Israel, and I'm seeing all these Microsoft guys go in and out of this conference room. And I pulled over one of the executives who I had built a good relationship with and a good rapport with. And to this day, it's like she's like my sister. Like, I know her family, her children. And she says, well, they're showing us a way to basically do an end around from an architectural perspective what NCR is asking us to do. And I'm like, listen.
Wow.
This is an American Fortune 500 company. They will level this entire floor. Like, you cannot approach it this way. But if you give me what Microsoft is sharing with you, let me present it as an option to the U.S. executives and put pros and cons around it, they might keep it. And then, and so being able to be on site and see what they're dealing with and know that you can't, as a leader, just say, we're going with an assimilation approach and think people are going to just follow you.
Yeah.
Is so important. And that's another reason why I'm such a advocate of face-to-face, you know, working face-to-face. If you are in this space as a project manager or something like that, you need to be seeing people, reading body language, seeing hearing inflections in people's voice.
And you can't do that over Zoom.
Can't do that over Zoom. Right. You got to have those water cooler conversations. Exactly. Like a lot of times you get the scoop coming out of the restroom or at the water cooler or at the coffee shop.
Right.
You don't get the scoop when you're on the meeting.
And it immediately puts into context, you know, where you might think travel to somewhere to have those might look like an expense that's sometimes out of hand. When you think about the kinds of the investments that companies are making in these huge initiatives, and that they might hinge on these water cooler relationships. I mean, these expenses are minuscule.
So I brought up the week schedule and the holidays because we had three deliverables, one on December 1st, one on December 24th, and one on January 1st. And these were all go-lives for payroll and compensation and HR for NCR. And NCR is trying to do it without having a team on site. And I'm like, listen, you're talking about going live with a group in another country while you're on holiday two out of the three times, and they're on holiday the other time.
Wow, wow. Yeah.
And so that doesn't make a lot of sense.
But, you know, they likely didn't even have the prowess or the awareness to realize how much of a difficulty that something like that would
that's going to be. And and so we ended up sending somebody over, and to your point, they look at it as an expense. They look at it as, oh, you just want another trip.
Right, right.
What I did is I didn't go, but I sent a team of their employees to Israel because you essentially need either somebody that's going to stay the entire month or sending teams in and out. And we just did a sort of boot camp type setting, a war room type setting. We mapped it out, and then we sent those guys ahead of time. It ended up working well, but at the end of the day, if you don't have somebody thinking about those challenges and how, look, their week ends on Thursday.
Right.
You're still working on Friday, sending emails, wondering why you're not getting responses.
Right, right.
Or they're sending out emails on Sunday and while you're either watching football or at church.
Exactly.
And you're trying to figure out what's going on.
Exactly.
And so if you want this $650 million merger to succeed, you might want to put in some hours on Sunday. And you might want to get them to put in some hours on Friday in order to bridge this divide and make it successful.
Yeah. You know, I'm fascinated about this in this conversation. We can really spend a lot of time really probably going through each of your clients and describing this political landscape. But we've got a bigger task to cover in this conversation, which I'm excited to have you guide these very nuanced conversations with other technology executives. And so the big news that we're sharing here in this episode of Finding Your Forte is that Corey Ruth is going to host a podcast.
Awesome.
And this podcast around are you managing or are you leading on purpose is going to be with a number of technology executives to have them navigate and share their perspectives around these things that they're thinking about. So this podcast that Corey is now going to host, that I can't wait to hear this conversation. He's going to bring in a number of the technology executive relationships that he has.
Yep.
he might not know this part, but I'm going to bring in some that I have as well and cue them up. And he's going to explore how they navigate these conversations. And hopefully we'll all have the opportunity to learn from these nuanced political landscapes that they've been able to navigate to either create successfully or failed, you know, project delivery. You know, failures are oftentimes the greatest opportunities to learn, right? Yep. And I'm sure that usually when those projects are in your wake, then you could, you know, kind of talk about what worked well and what didn't. Yeah. But, you know, I just want to first formally say welcome to the Finding Your Forte channel family.
Awesome.
For a new show that we're launching. You know, share your perspective, you know, in terms of like what you're looking forward to having as a part of these conversations.
Yeah. Well, I know that there's a lot of people out there who, A, are not aware that some of these professions even exist.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any kids, you know, who are in elementary school saying, when I grow up, I want to be a business analyst or a project manager or a systems admin. Mm-hmm. They just don't even know those roles exist. And so being able to introduce them to that world is something that I want to do.
Yeah.
The other thing is IT, information technology, is in every profession. So it doesn't matter the sector. It doesn't matter the industry. And if you are a nurse or you are a school teacher or you are a policeman and you say, I want to change my career and I want to get into information technology, guess what? You can get in as a project manager. You know the business.
Right.
So now you just need to learn the other side. And so this would give you sort of a bird's eye view into that world.
Absolutely.
And then the other thing is just being able to talk to these leaders and really peer into their real day in the life from the moment they get up to the moment they go to bed. You know, you be online and you see people post like, I get up every day at 5 a.m. I'm like, why? Like, is there a reason or you just do that?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and that's okay if you do. I'm just saying, you know, that's not necessarily tomorrow. I know too many successful people that don't wake up till 3 o'clock and they roll up and smoke first and then go do it. And they're more successful than all of us.
Right.
So it's just not necessarily the mark of success that you get up early. And so to me, I want to hear what these guys say. They may say, well, yeah, I roll out of the bed at 8 and then I work from home for the first half of the day and then I go in and or whatever. So really want to be able to peer into that. And then, of course, how are you navigating the politics of corporate America? And then also, how are you engaging your purpose in what you do?
That, you know, I sit here, I'm super excited and elated to, you know, be a part of this series of conversations. Corey and I are sitting here looking at this debonair photo that we have of him on this new podcast cover that we're going to be launching on the Up to Me Radio Network in the Finding Your Forte channel. It's a sexy photo, y'all. Just wait till we post it and share it. He is looking very reflective out on the horizon of technology executives and change. But it's a great shot. Corey, I'm so thankful that we were able to have this conversation.
I am. Yeah, we've been putting it off for a long time, so I'm really glad we're able to get it in and learn so much about myself and what I do just talking it out.
Well,
so
that's what I do. Michael Obama says when he hits that shot leaving the gym, it's what I do. It is what I do. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Finding Your Forte. We were really excited to be able to bring you this one. I knew this was going to be a good one. Yep. And this is just a reminder as you go about your day. And, you know, even as you think about some of the things that came from this conversation around navigating with intention around the political landscape, you have an opportunity to, you know, look for opportunities to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to the next episode.
Won't let the bad moments change my mind. I'm freeing my dreams from deep inside. I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I'm just trying to use what I got. Over time, you'll see that I may get a little bit weak. But it don't mean that I still don't have a dream. So I said, reach up and touch the sky. Moment as if it's my last. Don't wanna rush my lessons though. I'm embracing my future, learning from my past. I'm counting all my blessings.
Future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.